February 20th from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown and straight from America's Got Talent, Danielle Damon. That's Monday, January 20th from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Or listen live on KBOO Radio or view it on Open Signal Community Television.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 10:30 a.m. and it's time for me to remind you that KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Dark Side Cinema, open every night and featuring independent, foreign, and art house films. The Dark Side is located at 215 Southwest 4th Street between Madison and Jefferson Avenues in Corvallis, Oregon. More information and showtimes available online at darksidecinema.com.
It's at its favorite time of 10:30.
Film at 10:30.
Yes. I like to think of it as film until 11. Mm-hmm. But in any case, that voice you hear is Mark Mohan.
Hello.
Late of The Oregonian, where you worked for about 20 years, if I remember right.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. And now you do some reviewing for the website Oregon Arts.
Once in a while, not so much recently. I've been somewhat busy.
Yeah, is it? Does it cover movies very much, or is it mostly
when they
fine
can?
Arts?
I think they cover a lot of visual arts, theater, music, performing arts, that sort of thing, primarily.
Okay,
but it's a great website. Check it out, OregonOrArtsWatch.org.
Okay, good.
We love it.
Plug in. Now, Mona's not here this week. And next week, Rick Mitchell will be the co-host. We'll be covering dedicating the show to the Real Music Festival at the Film Studies Center. And then after that, perhaps we'll be hearing more from Mark.
I'm sure we can work something out.
Okay, good. Now, first, I'm going to zip through some of the openings, and maybe if you've seen some of these titles, you can pipe in, but the big opening today is, of course, 1917.
Yeah.
Have you seen that yet?
I've not, although it was the movie that completely busted my Golden Globes ballot prediction that I filled out. I kind of resent it, and I'm going into it with probably a poor attitude when I do see it.
Well, I did see it, and I'm not the biggest fan of Sam Mendes, but this is a much more personal project for him because it's based on recollections of his grandfather during World War One, but and it's got a gimmick, which is the whole single take notion, which proved not to be as irritating as I thought it would be. So there you have it. Then also, Like a Boss is opening. That's a Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, I read a really scathing review of that in the New York Times this morning.
Ooh, okay, can't wait.
I mean, I guess it's not shocking that the New York Times is not going to be a fan of this kind of raunchy comedy, but it was entertainingly scathing.
I'm sure they've got an equally scathing and entertaining one of Underwater, which is it's the quote new end quote Kristen Stewart film, which has sat on the shelf for 3 or 4 years. One reviewer said you can tell how old this movie is because T.J. Miller is in it, the discredited TV actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, by the way, is as annoying in the film as he is in real life.
Did you see Underwater?
I have seen Underwater. Yeah. I found it not completely enjoyable as far as the underwater scary thing goes, but it does have some unusual twists in it. And
tell me what the setup is. I don't even know.
Okay.
I assume it's set in a underwater.
It's in the Mariana Trench, right. And a bunch of people are working there for a mining company. They're actually on the surface of the ocean. And of course, the drillers unearth some kind of monster,
okay.
Or monsters. It's not very clear because you can't really see much of it. It's mostly in the dark. It's underwater. You know,
isn't that sort of the secret to like low budget horror filmmaking? Is that everything is in the shadows?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And in this particular case, it's an Alien remake with Kristen Stewart as the Sigourney Weaver character, and other ones, you know. Inspired by the other characters, and eventually she's got to take command of the thing. So, it's a very minor, you know, get stoned and watch it some hot summer night kind of a thing. But if you're a Kristen Stewart completist, well, there you go. it's finally out. You get to see it. And among the revivals, and Just Mercy is opening in some places. Mm. That's the Death Row.
It's a legal drama.
Legal drama.
Sort. Yeah, yeah.
The murder of Nicole Brown Simpson is playing somewhere, but please avoid it if you can. It is a very bad movie and kind of an insult to the family of her. And
is it a dramatization?
It's a dramatization.
Oh my goodness!
And I can't believe I forget who's in it. I can look that up really quickly, but I was shocked at the person that was playing her, who happens to be, wait for it, Mina Suvari.
Oh, crazy. Goodness. Once of American Beauty,
yes.
Fame, briefly.
Okay, so 1917 is playing at Studio One and Cinema 21 and other places. Mm-hmm. Laurelhurst has its usual Just Out movies.
Mm-hmm. Not the movie Just Out.
No.
But yes.
Recently released films. Avalon has, I think it's carrying over with Midway and Maleficent. The Living Room has this film about three people in a sanitarium. It's called
Three, I saw this.
Three Christs.
Yes. Did you watch it?
No.
Well, so yeah, it's the setup is it's based on fact, theoretically. A psychiatrist played by Richard Gere in the 1950s or maybe early 60s in Michigan has three patients, each of whom is convinced is under the delusion that they're Jesus Christ. And mm-hmm. they're played by Peter Dinklage, Bradley Whitford, and Walton Goggins.
Oh,
so
good.
This kind of interesting collection of actors put together. Unfortunately, the movie itself is really heavy-handed, stilted. The performances are, you know, unconvincing. Peter Dinklage seems to be convinced now that he has to have this sort of Game of Thrones British accent in everything he does.
He never did it well in the first place.
For some reason, yeah. It's like, he is an American actor.
Yes.
so I can't recommend it, even though it's pretty well-meaning overall, but I didn't feel like, I don't know. It was frankly pretty bad. I kept wondering if there were three Christs, if maybe one of them might forgive the makers of this movie. But,
good one.
Thank you. Yeah, it's playing at the Living Room. It's, you know, I feel bad dissing it because
yes.
It's clearly Richard Gere likes to do things that have social value,
yes.
And I think he thought this was one of those, but just not very compelling.
Okay. Well, sorry to hear that, but thank you for, you know, taking one for the critical team here.
Anytime.
Kiggins, Uncut Gems is still there, but so is this documentary Fantastic Fungi.
Which has turned out to be, I haven't seen it, but it's been quite the sort of slow burn hit in the indie theater world, at least in Portland.
Yeah. I haven't seen it either, but I do know that Portlanders, perhaps understandably so, are fascinated by mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And
it is a damp place,
it
Portland.
Is, and it's a big, yeah. It's a big deal. So, but I don't. But also, they're showing a movie called "Float Like a Butterfly," which is a movie about a young female aspirant boxer who loves Muhammad Ali. That's about
and
all I know.
Where
about
is that playing?
This is still at the Kiggins.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus, This Gun for Hire, one of the old noirs.
Ooh, Alan Ladd.
Yes.
And Veronica Lake. Right? Is that right?
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't ever really know what the Church of Film people are showing because they tend to make up their mind about it on the day of the performing or the day before, so I get an email at the last minute. But they do have an event this week at the Clinton Street Theater, Clinton Street being a friend of the station. The Film Study Center is continuing. Well, we'll get to that in a second, but they're showing Faster Pussycat Kill.
Oh, yeah. That's what, is that Saturday night, I think?
Yeah.
That would be worth checking out.
That will be really fun. Yeah. And then Hard Day's Night. The Beatles, of course. But also they're showing American Factory and several other films by Julie Richard. Tell me what you know about her, because you have an interesting...
Yeah, well, I've spent a decent part of the last week watching a bunch of these films. So yeah, Julia, I don't know if it's Richard or Reichert. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce the last name. I'm going to go with Reichert. She will be in town for this retrospective of her documentary work, which she has been involved in for, according to the title of the program, 50 years. The earliest film that's in this retrospective is from 1971, so pretty close. We'll start with her latest movie, which is probably of broadest interest, and then we can talk about some of the others. And that one is American Factory, which just came out recently. It is, you should go see it at the Film Center, to be clear. The filmmaker will be there and will be very disappointed if you are not there. However, if you are not able to make it, it is streaming on Netflix as well. It was executive produced, I think, by Barack and Michelle Obama, who are newcomers to the film world, but they seem to have some promise. I don't know if we've heard of them before or not. and it's about this shuttered auto plant in Dayton, Ohio, that was closed in 2008 after the economic crash, and is now bought by a Chinese company and reopened in order to become a factory for making auto glass. And the documentary chronicles the kind of challenges, both in terms of the culture clash with the Chinese management coming in and trying to relate to the American workers and vice versa, as well as eventually a conflict, you know, that is a more basic one just between management and labor, and how that plays out. And I thought it was really fascinating and really did a great job of being even-handed in its treatment of those various conflicts, and really introducing us to a lot of individuals on both sides of the equation who were really sympathetic. Most of them, there's a few
hateful
in here. well-paced, really interesting, a little sad, I think something that just is a really great time capsule for like this moment in American history.
It's definitely one of the best films of last year. I'm assuming it's a 2019.
I think so,
release.
Because I think it's eligible for Oscar consideration year. And
It's a great documentary. I watched it twice. It's really powerful in a way that is both kind of shocking and nuanced, and like it's an impossible situation. This clash of cultures and business philosophies. It puts me in mind of Paul Schrader's first directorial effort, Blue Collar, because at a certain point, workers are set against each other, which suits the needs of the corporation. So it's well overseen. But how many of her films are they presenting?
There's several. There are a few different programs this weekend as well as next weekend. I think that... Ms. Reichert will be in town this weekend and will attend the screening of American Factory and do a Q&A, and they're showing a few others as well, and then it continues next weekend. A lot of them do concern themselves with the history of the labor movement in this country and the history of the left. Her first movie that's in here is called Growing Up Female. It was made in 1971, and it's basically a series of vignettes or interviews, profiles of women. The first one is maybe a third grader, and then they get older and older until the last one is maybe 35. And they just talk about the process of sort of how women are socialized and how... I mean, it's a very current-seeming attitude that's taken, very... forward-looking and just a fascinating, again, a fascinating mm-hmm. time capsule of its time. There's other ones. There's a movie called Union Maids that's about women who worked in the unions in
the
30s.
I believe that's probably her most famous, recognizable title. Yeah.
And there's one other that I'll mention unless we have more time. I could go on and on because they're all really fascinating. This movie I saw when it came out, which was 2006, I haven't seen it since, and I'm not sure I could bear to, but it's one of the most impactful movies I've ever seen. It's called A Lion in the House, and it is a four-hour documentary about a children's cancer ward in a hospital. And I know that doesn't sound like, you know, a fun night out at the movies by any stretch, but it's masterful. Like, it is,
and it's a story that needs to be told.
Oh yes, yeah. And there, I mean, there's heroism, there's bravery, there's and there's also a lot of heartache and struggles and tribulations. But if you're up for it and you feel like you can handle it, mm-hmm. it is an experience that if you're like me, you probably won't ever forget.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Well. Just a note, this is Film at 11 on KBOO, and I'm DK Holm, and I'm talking with Mark Mohan, and he's summarizing some of the films of Julie Rickert. We'll ask her how to pronounce her name when you see her this weekend, would you? Thanks.
Yeah, if I do, I don't know if I'll be available then, but if I do, I certainly shall.
Yes, and you know, there was a movie that played last weekend at the Film Study Center, which I wanted to see but couldn't, and it is called Redoubt, and it's the latest, I believe, Matthew Barney art project film, but you managed to see it, and you have to me, your take on Matthew Barney is really interesting and inspiring in a way. But
wow, thank you. I'm touched.
Go go into some detail about, because I really enjoyed that anecdote you told me the other time we
talked. Yeah, well, I mean, for folks who might not know the name, Matthew Barney is, I think he would probably describe himself as an artist rather than as a director or a filmmaker specifically. He does a lot of kind of multimedia projects, but ultimately he's best known for these films he makes, which are very experimental, challenging art films, you know, not real strong in the narrative department necessarily, but really big on spectacle and you know, unique. And I don't use that word lightly. Right? They are unique experiences. The latest one, I guess we'll start with the latest one, which is called Readout, REDOUBT, not readout, not like a computer readout, mm-hmm. but a you know, a little fortress, a readout. And it's kind of his simplest movie yet, and maybe his most kind of audience friendly. It was filmed in the mountains in Idaho, and it's kind of about these three women who are out hunting. And then Matthew Barney himself plays a sort of park ranger character who follows in their footsteps and does weird experiments. And there's a whole thing with a woman who makes etchings of drawings that he does. So it's hard to describe briefly, but it also has no dialogue and is performed almost as a dance piece. It's a little over 2 hours long, which may sound like a lot, but wait until you hear about his other movies. and it's, you know, it's compelling if you, you know, again, you've got to buy into it and you've got to be willing to do that. And I say, you know, it's a little over 2 hours. His last cinematic effort, which was 3 or 4 years ago, called River of Fundament, was about 6 hours long. There was an intermission. But
you sat through the whole thing.
I sat through the whole thing.
And why do you like Barney so much?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point. It's interesting. I like it for a lot of reasons. One of the things that makes it really impactful for me is this sort of durational aspect where you are in a chair in a theater and, you know, you've got to sit there. You can't pause it. You can't, you know, get up to use the bathroom or something. If, I mean, you can, but you'll miss a bit. And you can't. You're just not distracted by other things. You're forced to sort of enter this world completely, and that's really important for these kinds of movies. You know, I think it's less important for, you know, your basic Hollywood spectacles to some degree.
Well, you saw that's one, and also the Cremaster series,
yeah,
probably at the height of your workload of movie viewing. Mm. And what you said that was so fascinating was that you, these movies step so far outside the narrow margin of what Hollywood and even most European movies do.
Yeah, no, that's totally true as well. I think, and that's it's one of those things that makes me realize why sometimes folks who aren't seeing 8 movies a week can get annoyed when a film critic says, "Oh my God, you've got to see this this amazing 6-hour art project," uh-huh. and they take your word for it and they buy a ticket and they go and it's just not, you know, and they're not into it. They just want a movie with a story. For those of us who do this, you know, for a living or as an avocation, anything that's outside the bounds is automatically going to be more appealing because,
yes.
you know, we're so used to the tropes and the genres and the, you know, the product that comes out all the time that, that it, you know, something like this really stands out. And so maybe sometimes we tend to overpraise it or praise it in ways that maybe leads people who don't want that experience
it's
to go
problem.
There.
That's you know, as it happens, my philosophy is I'm not telling anybody what to see or not to see. I'm just reporting my reaction to it. And
oh, Doug, you need to realize the power you have.
No, geez. And I'm basically viewing myself as a defender of the art form, not as a consumer reporter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in any case, your dedication to this whole concept of durée, as the French mm-hmm. supposedly say, you actually sat through all of Satan Tango.
Yes, I've seen that as well. Yes, yes.
That's a 6-hour, 8 hours?
I think it's maybe 6, maybe a little less. That's the Béla-Tarr
right.
film. And that one is among the more challenging because not only is it super long, it's these incredibly slow, long takes. So you'll have, you know, I think the opening shot of the movie is a camera moving laterally through like a farmyard or something for, you know, 7 minutes or something.
It's one of those
just slow movement.
It's one of those mud-laden, rickety villages.
Yeah.
But you're in good company, you know, just so that people, the good people at home, don't think you're completely outré. Gus Van Sant is greatly influenced by Béla-Tarr.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of Gus's favorite filmmakers.
And you can
filmmakers.
See that in movies that he
exactly.
makes, like
Elephant
and Jerry.
We're certainly talking about this a lot more than I thought, but it is still a fascinating topic because Barney's movies are, okay, when one says art experimental or art film, the average person will think instantly that it's some cheap 16mm or 8mm thing, but in fact these are real movies that are beautifully put together. For example, my favorite of the Craymaster films is the one set in Idaho with that's tangentially concerned with the executioner song guy.
Oh yes, Gary Gilmore.
And those sequences are just beautifully crafted and presented. I think Barney plays Gilmore himself? Or
I think that's true. Yeah, he usually does appear in his own work.
But what's also interesting is the Norman Mailer connection.
Yes.
Because he pops up in some of the Craymaster films as himself. I mean, as an actor.
Right.
And
the River of Fundament is basic. Well, there's nothing basic about that movie, but in large part it is inspired by Mailer's book Ancient Evenings, which was frankly one of his more reviled works when it came out in the 70s.
And that's tough competition.
Yes, right. And it's sort of a testament to Mailer in general. I think because I think the affinity between Norman Mailer and Matthew Barney stems from the fact that they both are incredibly artistic and poetic souls, but they also exude this masculine energy or musk. I mean, Barney, to hear these films described and to hear a lot of his work described, it might be surprising, we shouldn't base things this way, but it might be surprising when you see him in person that he's this large, burly, bearded character. He's far from the image of the sort of, you know, effete artiste that some of his work might make you think.
Of the parody version of the fin de siècle type
right.
of person. But
he's, he does some, there's football and hunting and stuff like that in his movies.
So he's more in the Pollock realm of artists.
I would say so, yeah.
Well, okay, so that's the problem. We played last weekend. How are we going to see it?
Well, you know? And I don't know about this film. I know his previous movies are usually only available to see when he screens them as part of an exhibition of his work theatrically. Other than a very short segment of one of the Cremaster movies, none of the other stuff has come out on disc or streaming or anything. Again, I don't know about Redoubt.
Yeah.
So hopefully there will be a chance to see it down the road. If there is, grab it.
Yes. Or give it a chance. Go to a video shop and see if they happen to have, Movie Madness. You never know what Movie Madness has.
Yep, true enough.
Okay, so moving on, then we'll just wrap up with some of the other revivals that are coming. Hollywood has
Are they doing that Nicolas Cage series? Oh,
yes. I was just about to say that.
Yes, yes.
Raising Arizona, Wild at Heart, Valley Girl, and Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah.
So that's prime Cage.
And are they not, maybe this is next weekend, I don't want to get ahead of us, but they're doing a screening of Red Rock West as well, I believe.
That's one of my favorite films, Soleil.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Look it up. It's a, it's a good
coinage. S-O-L-E-I-L, Soleil.
And they're also showing, they do periodically a pre-code movie, once a month or so. And this month it's Safe in Hell, which is a William Wellman movie, and he did Among the Best of the
I haven't seen that one. I love the pre-code stuff, and they're always fun on the big screen.
The Criterion Collection has just released a previously very difficult to run down movie called The Story of Temple Drake, based on, of all things, William Faulkner's Sanctuary. And it is a terrific movie. I mean, as a movie, it's terrific. It's not, you don't look at it as something quaint or funny or just racy for its time. It's actually a very provocative psychological portrait.
Do you have a copy?
I do.
Can I borrow it?
Of course you can.
Excellent.
The Academy has Rebel Without a Cause, and they're showing the second part of the Potter Deathly Hallows movie. Fifth Avenue Cinema has Pillow Talk, the Doris Day, Rock Hudson movie.
At the Fifth Avenue? PSU Cinema?
Yes, it is. Do they still call themselves the Fifth Avenue, or do they call themselves...
I think so.
I remember when that place opened. And then the DVDs that are coming out this Tuesday include Maleficent 2 and Gemini Man, plus Running with the Devil, a Nicolas Cage movie, and...
If you don't like the current Nicolas Cage movie, just wait a couple of weeks. There'll be a new one
to fill in. And we're going to skip. Sometimes we do people who've passed away recently, but I was thinking maybe we should skip that this week and wait for Mona to. She likes to cover these.
Oh, sure.
Let's just quickly lament that among them are Buck Henry and Ed Burns and Yvonne Passer. Who's famous for Cutter's Way.
The director of Cutter's Way. I did not know that he had passed.
Yes, I just read it this morning. So anyway, we've only got 2 minutes left. Is there something that you've seen particularly, or some film movement or event that's the Golden Globes you mentioned as something bitterly...
Well, yes, I did watch the Golden Globes. And I did, my family does this thing where we all print out ballots and try to predict who will win. Uh-huh. And I did pull off a narrow 1-point victory.
Ooh.
So I can get that out in the public record. overall, I guess there's been some controversy about the host of the Golden Globes, Ricky Gervais, and his opening monologue and how sort of scathing it was towards the Hollywood liberal elite.
How did it strike you?
I thought it was hilarious in the moment. I think that most of the things, there were a couple clunkers, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I think that and Joaquin Phoenix did a similar thing when he accepted his award, sort of called out some of the hypocrisy that we see from these generally well-meaning but rich, famous, movie stars.
That's funny.
They could do more.
You don't think of Brad Pitt as a stand-up comedian necessarily, but when he was at the New York Film Circles Award, giving an award to Quentin Tarantino, he had a string of jokes about Tarantino's personality that were extremely hilarious. But he's still saying things like, Quentin Tarantino, he's the sort of guy who takes cocaine to stop talking and so forth. So very funny. Well,
he can do anything, Brad Pitt.
He just gets better looking as he gets older. Yeah. It's amazing. Anyway, we've been talking with Mark Mohan. I am DK Holm. This has been Film at 11, and thank you for listening, and we'll be talking to Mark again on the show within a couple of weeks, I hope.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I'm Shahid Hamid, KBOO board member. Join the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Radio as we pay homage to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's the 35th anniversary of Keep Alive the Dream, Monday, January the 20th, from 11 to 6:30 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center. This year, we will be joined by international opera star Angela Brown.